Good evening, this is Sue, VK4ST. You are listening to Q5, the Education Hour of the Gold Coast Amateur Radio Society.
Hello, this is Ron, VK2DQ. Tonight's discussion is going to be surrounding dipoles. But before we go into that, we're going to have a brief discussion of standing wave ratio, standing waves, what they are, what they mean, what they tell us, and so forth, because it's very difficult to talk about antennas without comprehension of what standing waves are and what they tell us. The reason for this is that standing waves tell us about the match between our antenna and our transmitter, and whether or not our antenna is resonant. Standing waves are not the only way to do this, but they're certainly a simple, easy and effective way of doing it. It might be an idea if you have pen and paper ready, because in tonight's session we'll be describing some diagrams, giving you some measurements, and also giving you some equations as well. Radio transmission, and for that matter reception, is about taking energy from a radio transmitter, feeding it along a transmission line, such as a coaxial cable, to an antenna, and then having that antenna radiate that signal. In an ideal situation, all of the energy that we send from the transmitter to the transmission line arrives at the antenna and is radiated by the antenna into space. In a practical situation, that usually doesn't happen. In a practical situation, what happens is some of the energy arriving at the antenna is accepted by the antenna and radiated, and a portion of the radio energy arriving is reflected by the antenna and travels backwards down the transmission line towards the transmitter. So you actually have some of your energy going out of the transmitter through the transmission line to the antenna and being radiated, and some of the energy that arrives at the antenna is reflected by it back down the transmission line to the transmitter. This doesn't occur at all if the feed point impedance of the transmission line and the impedance of the coaxial cable are the same. If we have a feed line impedance of 50 ohms or whatever, and that is equal to or exactly the same as the antenna impedance, then all of the power arriving at the antenna will be accepted by the antenna and radiated. Now, for some, this sounds a little bit hard to visualize, how you could have some power being radiated and some power being reflected. However, such a situation is not unusual, and it occurs in everyday circumstances as well. For example, could you imagine being in a squash court, standing with your back against the wall of a squash court, and shouting towards the wall in front of you? The sound wave would travel from your voice across the squash court and hit the opposite wall. Some of the energy from that sound wave will be dissipated or absorbed by the wall, and some of the energy will be reflected by the wall and will travel back across the squash court to you, and you would hear that as an echo. So in this case, it's sound energy that we're sending forward. Sound arrives at its load, which is the wall. Some of the sound is absorbed by the wall, which is analogous to our antenna, and some of the sound is reflected from the wall back to us. So we've got forward going energy to the wall, some of it being absorbed, dissipated, and some of it being reflected back. There's another situation away from radio where you have reflected energy or reflected waves. in every circumstance where we're trying to transfer energy from a source to a load, the same situation occurs. Imagine you're hitting an anvil with a hammer. What you're trying to do is transfer a lot of energy from the hammer to the anvil. So you rise the hammer above your head, you swing down, and you hit the anvil with a great deal of force. What happens? Some of the energy from the hammer is absorbed by the anvil. You know that because it gets hot. And some of the energy is reflected. And you know that because the hammer bounces back. It bounces off the anvil. So you're trying to transfer energy from the hammer to the anvil. You strike the anvil. The anvil does absorb some of the energy, but some of the energy is reflected back, and you realize that when the hammer bounces off the anvil with significant force sometimes. It's interesting in this example to note that the energy that bounces back off the anvil is not lost. Yes, the hammer bounces back, sometimes violently, off the anvil, but if you allow it to, the hammer will again fall onto the anvil. And this time it will absorb, the anvil will absorb more energy, and it will bounce back again. And if you allow it, you can allow the hammer to fall on the anvil again, and when it does, more energy will be absorbed, and the hammer will come back again. Each time, the amount of bounce back that the hammer has is going to be less and less and less. So if you watch a blacksmith beating metal, he normally gives it one big hit, most of the energy from his hit is absorbed, and then the hammer bounces back three or four times and eventually comes to a stop, and all of the energy is then transferred from the anvil to the from the hammer to the anvil. So if we have a transmitter connected to a transmission line, we'll presume 50 ohm coaxial cable, and that connects to an antenna which has an impedance of 50 ohms, then all of the energy fed from the transmitter into the cable, traveling through the cable, arrives at the antenna. All of that energy is accepted by the antenna and radiated. That's the ideal situation. Often, the case is that the antenna impedance does not equal the transmission line impedance. In such a case, energy arriving at the antenna is partially accepted by the antenna and radiated and partially reflected. Now think of the anvil and the hammer. The hammer strikes the anvil with a great deal of energy. Some of the energy from the hammer is absorbed by the anvil and dissipated, and some of the energy is reflected, which is demonstrated by the hammer bouncing back. So going back to our transmission line, that where the impedances of the coaxial cable and the antenna are not equal, some of the energy is absorbed and radiated by the antenna, and some of the energy is reflected back down the transmission line towards the transmitter. So you've got two waves, a forward-going energy wave being radiated by the aerial and a reflected energy wave travelling from the aerial back towards the transmitter. Now this is where it gets a little bit confusing for many, because it might appear on the surface that the reflected wave is bad and that you have lost energy. You've lost transmitter power in this reflected wave. That's not really the case. If you think of the anvil, after the initial primary strike, the hammer bounces back. If the user allows the hammer to drop once more onto the anvil, then that power that was reflected has another chance of being dissipated in the anvil. So when you see a blacksmith striking an anvil with a heavy hammer, you see the hammer bounce several times off the anvil until all of the energy from the hammer has been transferred to the anvil. Now, believe it or not, exactly the same thing happens on a transmission line and antenna. The reflected energy that travels back down the transmission line from the antenna arrives at the transmitter and is totally re-reflected. It is sent backwards again towards the antenna. When that reflected energy arrives back at the antenna, just like the hammer coming down on the anvil for the second time, some of the energy is radiated and some of it is reflected. So there will be a second reflection now going back down the transmission line to the transmitter. So just as the hammer on the anvil bounces several times before all of the energy is transferred to the anvil, the radio wave that arrives at the antenna is reflected back and forth along the transmission line several times before eventually it is all radiated. If you think that this might result in you hearing echoes on the signal, think again, because the velocity at which the radio wave is reflected back and forth along the transmission line is enormous, around about 70% the velocity of light. So you're not going to hear any echoes on the transmission. The point is that reflected energy from the antenna due to impedance mismatch is not lost energy.
This is Q5, the Education Hour of the Gold Coast Amateur Radio Society.
So you see now that you have actually signals travelling in both directions. Unless you have a perfect match between the transmitter, the coaxial line, or whatever line you're using, and the antenna, you're going to have this reflected energy occurring on the transmission line. One thing I'll mention, if this happens on a TV system, if you have a mismatch between the antenna and the transmission line, the received signal will bounce back and forth along the feeder of the TV, and you will see this as ghosting. There will be ghosting on the TV screen. So you have two waves, one travelling towards the antenna and one travelling backwards from a reflected wave travelling backwards from the antenna to the transmitter. Now the forward going wave is typically referred to as the incident wave. Incident just means forward going wave, and the wave travelling back from the antenna is the reflected wave. So two waves, incident and reflected. Now, if you had two waves in the ocean, if you could set up two wave fronts in the ocean and collide them with each other, like a great big pond if you like, and you throw two big rocks into the pond, you would create two waves and they would travel towards each other. When those waves arrive and mix together, they interfere with each other, and you get the result of two waves mixing together and interfering with each other is called a standing wave. So on our transmission line we have an incident going wave and a reflected wave, and on the transmission line the resultant, or the mix of that forward going wave and the reflected wave, is called the standing wave. It's called a standing wave because the pattern of voltage and current created by a standing wave on a transmission line does not move. Instead of a travelling wave, which is the crests and troughs of the wave are changing all the time, if you see a wave coming into a beach, if you see waves coming into a beach, you can actually follow the crest of a wave and it will move. The crest of the wave will move. In fact, a surfer sits on the crest of a wave so that they can surf, because the crest moves and carries the surf along with it. Likewise, the troughs between the crests, they also move as well. However, when you have two wave fronts travelling in opposite directions, what happens is you get them mixing together and they create waves, which consists of crests and troughs. However, the position of the crests and the position of the troughs do not change. They are stationary. They stay in the one place. This is an interference pattern between the reflected and incident waves. And so you could take a voltmeter, and on a line that has standing waves on it, you could move that voltmeter along the transmission line and measure the voltage at different points, and you would find a point where the voltage was maximum and you have found a crest. You could then continue to move the voltmeter along the transmission line and you would find a short distance further on a point of low voltage. You have found a trough, and this would continue right along the line. You would have a number of crests and a number of troughs, and what you are measuring is the standing wave of voltage. In fact, that is exactly what is done in broadcasting. In broadcasting, parallel pair wires are used to feed the antenna. Looks very much like telephone wires on top of big poles. That's actually the transmission line across the paddock to the antenna. It is possible to actually walk underneath the transmission line with a voltmeter on a stick up in the air, and you can measure the troughs of the standing wave and the peaks of the standing wave. Now, we don't do that in amateur radio. We use a device called an SWR meter, and the SWR meter does not measure the troughs of voltage and the peaks of voltage that make up the standing wave. The SWR meter measures the ratio between the crest voltage and the trough voltage. So suppose the crest voltage was 10 volts and the trough voltage was 5 volts. The ratio between 10 to 5 is 2. The SWR standing wave ratio is 2 to 1. If the crest voltage was 15 volts and the trough voltage was 5 volts, then the ratio between 5 and 15 is 3. The SWR is 3 to 1. That's the measurement that the SWR meter does for us. If there are no standing waves, then there are no crests and there are no troughs. If there are no standing waves, we would measure the same voltage all along the transmission line. And if we measure the voltage in one point, it might be 10 volts. If we went to another point, it might be 10 volts. If we went to another point, it might be 10 volts. And another point, it might be 10 volts. The ratio between 10 and 10 is 1. The SWR is 1 to 1. That is also why we call a line without standing waves a flat line. It's a flat line because the voltage along the line is the same at all points.
This is Q5, the Education Hour of the Gold Coast Amateur Radio Society. Each week, Q5 brings you technical topics on amateur radio, science, physics, and general interest for the radio amateur.
So our SWR meter then is an instrument which tells us whether we have a match of impedance between our transmission line and our antenna. If the transmission line is 75 ohms and our antenna is 75 ohms, there is no mismatch there, because 75 to 75 is 1, the SWR is 1 to 1. If our transmission line was 100 ohms and our antenna was 50 ohms, 100 to 50 is an SWR of 2 to 1. If our transmission line was 50 ohms and our antenna was 100 ohms, that's also 2 to 1. Doesn't matter which way the impedance goes, So if the transmission line is 100 and the antenna is 50, that's a 2-to-1 SWR. If the transmission line is 50 and the antenna is 100, that's also a 2-to-1 SWR. If the transmission line is 50 ohms and the antenna is 200 ohms, then that's a 4-to-1 SWR. Now, SWR meter is telling us what that ratio between the characteristic impedance of the transmission line and the antenna is. Now, in some situations, we want match to occur. We want an SWR 1-to-1. In other situations, we do not care what the SWR is. And that's the hardest part to explain to the newcomer, why sometimes an SWR which is not 1-to-1 is quite satisfactory. We've already discussed that the reflected energy, when the transmission line impedance does not match the antenna impedance, there is reflected power, and we've already discussed how that reflected power is not lost power, because it is re-reflected from the transmitter back up the transmission line and has another chance to radiate. And it will get multiple chances to radiate until all of it is radiated. So if a reflected signal gets multiple opportunities to be radiated, a very fair question you might ask is, what is the big deal with SWR? What does it really matter if the reflected signal will bounce backwards and forwards along the transmission line until it's all radiated, like the hammer striking an anvil will bounce on the anvil until all of the energy from the hammer is dissipated in the anvil? If that's the case, then what is the big deal about SWR? Well, we all know that a transmission line has loss. Whatever the signal is you put into a transmission line, you will lose some of that signal as it travels along the line. So ideally then, and the purpose of the transmission line is to guide the signal from the transmitter to the antenna. The ideal situation is we'd like our signal to leave the transmitter and go into the transmission line, travel along the transmission line, leave the transmission line, go into the antenna and be re-radiated. If that signal has to traverse the transmission line multiple times before it's radiated, then that signal will experience the losses of the transmission line multiple times as well. If a transmission line had 3 dB loss and no reflected waves, so 3 dB loss in an SWR of 1-to-1, so there is no reflection, then the transmitter energy would go into the transmission line, travel along it once, and experience a 3 dB loss. Whatever arrived at the aerial would be absorbed by the aerial and radiated. If we had multiple reflections, the signal would arrive at the transmitter, at the antenna, after experiencing a 3 dB loss. Some of it would be radiated, and a small portion of it reflected. Now that reflected energy will go back to the transmitter and be re-reflected to the antenna, and more of it will be radiated. However, every time that reflected wave travels the transmission line, it will experience the transmission line loss. And because it's a two-way journey, down to the transmitter and back up again, you have twice the loss, or 6 dB. So, what is the disadvantage of having a high SWR? The answer is, your transmission line losses are increased. Another problem with high SWR is that some modern transmitters will refuse to operate unless the SWR is quite low, say 1.5-to-1 or less. Now, this extra transmission line loss is really only applicable to coaxial cable. because coaxial cable has a fairly lossy type of transmission line. With parallel lines, such as 300 ohm ribbon or ladder line, that's parallel pair transmission line, the SWR, the extra loss due to SWR is really insignificant, because parallel line is such a lossless line anyway. So that's why when radio amateurs use parallel line to feed their antennas, they don't really bother themselves too much with SWR. They use an antenna tuner at the transmitter. So just in summary, the SWR is the ratio between the impedance of the transmission line you're using and the feed point impedance of the antenna. In an ideal situation, the impedance of the two is equal. So in an ideal situation, if you're using 50 ohm line, you will terminate that line onto an antenna which has a feed point impedance of 50 ohms. In a practical situation, that often doesn't occur, and you end up with something called standing waves. The ratio between the peaks and the troughs of those standing waves is called the standing wave ratio, and the instrument that measures that standing wave ratio is the SWR meter. So the SWR meter is our means of determining the degree of match between our transmitter, our transmission line, and our antenna. That's a very brief overview of standing waves. We'll obviously, I think, revisit this subject in the future, because transmission lines and standing waves and so forth is something we could really go on and on about for hours. Let's now talk about a dipole antenna, and we'll be using some of the information we've discussed on SWR shortly in respect to that dipole antenna. A dipole antenna is a half wavelength long. A length of wire, a half wavelength long, is a dipole. And the way we calculate that length, if you've got your pen and paper ready, you might like to write down this formula. The way we calculate the length of a dipole in meters is to take 300 and divide that by the frequency in megahertz, multiply the answer by 0.5, and multiply by 0.96. Now I'll go through that again and I'll explain what we're doing here. 300 is the velocity of light. We're using 300 rather than 300 million meters per second, because using 300 allows us to use frequency in megahertz rather than frequency in hertz. If you can remember this formula, you can use it to calculate the length of just about any antenna. So again, the length of a dipole is 300 divided by frequency in megahertz. That gives us a wavelength. Now we're going to multiply by 0.5. That will give us a half wavelength. And now we need to shorten the antenna a little bit, because the real length of an antenna is a little bit shorter than the free space wavelength. So we're going to multiply by 0.96. And that shortens the antenna by about 4%. So length of a dipole is 300 divided by frequency in megahertz, multiplied by 0.95, multiplied by 0.96, gives us our length in meters. Now, you can calculate that, generally you would calculate the length of the dipole to be the center of the band where you're going to be operating. So if you're on 2 meters, 144 to 148 megahertz, you'd probably use 146 megahertz for the F in megahertz there in that equation. So now you've got your dipole, you now have to string it up in the air on insulators and using insulators and rope, and you now need to connect your transmission line to it. Where you connect your transmission line to a dipole is totally optional. It's where you want to connect it. There are advantages in connecting the cable to the, or the transmission line to the end, to the center, or somewhere else. The most normal place to connect the feed line to a half-wave dipole is to the center. the center of a half-wave dipole is typically has an impedance of 72 ohms. The ends of the dipole have an impedance somewhere between 2 and 3,000 ohms, and the center of the dipole is about 72 ohms. So you string it up in the air, held on the ends by insulators and rope or string or whatever, and you connect your transmission line to the center of the dipole, remembering that you're going to get a feed point impedance on the dipole of about 72 ohms. Now, if we suppose we connect a 75 ohm coaxial cable to our dipole, to the center of our dipole, the dipole has a 72 ohm impedance at its center, and we're connecting a 75 ohm coaxial cable to it. What would the SWR be? For practical purposes, 72 and 75 are the same thing. So I'm sure you'll agree that a 75 ohm cable connected to a 72 ohm feed point impedance dipole will give you an SWR so close to 1 to 1, it doesn't matter. So the SWR would be 1 to 1. Now, 75 ohm cable is not a popular cable with radio amateurs, but there's absolutely no reason why you can't use it. The more popular cable is 50 ohm for radio transmission. Suppose now instead of 72 ohm cable you used 50 ohm cable and connected it to the center of your dipole, which has an impedance of 72 ohms. So what would you expect the SWR to be? You've got 50 ohm cable connected to a 72 ohm feed point impedance. You simply divide 50 into 70, you'll find you'll get an SWR of 1.4 to 1. 1.4 to 1. Now, this is the important point. You should have an SWR of 1.4 to 1. If you're using 50 ohm cable and you make your dipole perfectly, you will get an SWR of 1.4 to 1. If you were to go and adjust the size of the dipole now, you would be doing the wrong thing. You do not expect to get an SWR of 1 to 1. You only expect to get an SWR of 1 to 1 when the cable you're using and the feed point impedance of the antenna you're using at resonance are the same. If you're using 75 ohm cable connected to a dipole which is supposed to have a 72 ohm feed point impedance, you expect and want an SWR of 1 to 1. However, if you're using a 72 ohm feed point impedance dipole and 50 ohm coaxial cable and you measure an SWR of 1 to 1, then something's wrong. You're not supposed to have, or not supposed to get, an SWR of 1 to 1. Your SWR should be 1.4 to 1. If it's not 1.4 to 1, then you've done something wrong. And there's many cases where radio amateurs and other radio hobbyists put up such a dipole and measure an SWR of 1.5 to 1 and say, well, that's not good enough. I really want to bring the SWR down to 1 to 1. And so what they do is start chopping bits off the sides of the dipole, and they're detuning the dipole. They've done it right in the first place. They've calculated the correct length, but because they've not understood that with a dipole, center-fed dipole with 72 ohm feed point impedance and a 50 ohm line, you are not expecting to get an SWR of 1 to 1. In fact, as I've said, if you do get an SWR of 1 to 1, something is wrong, terribly wrong. So there's an example where an SWR of 1 to 1 is not really what you're after. You're expecting to find an SWR higher than that. So you've got your dipole, you've strung it up in the air, you want to have it ideally about a half wavelength above ground, horizontally, with your coaxial cable feeding the centre. You can just connect your coaxial cable to the centre of this dipole. You connect the shield to one side of the dipole, and you connect your centre conductor to the other side of the dipole. However, that is not the most desirable situation. It will work, but it's not the most desirable. And for the next few minutes, we're going to be discussing how to connect your coaxial cable to the dipole. A dipole antenna is called a balanced antenna. a good way to work out if an antenna is balanced or not is to look at it and see if it looks symmetrical, to see if it has two sides and it looks the same on both sides. If you look at a dipole, it's a half wavelength long. You have a quarter wave on one side and a quarter wave on the other side. It's a balanced antenna when fed at the centre. The impedance between each side of the dipole and ground is the same. For that reason, it's called a balanced antenna. If you look at coaxial transmission line and ask yourself, is the impedance, if you have trouble with impedance, think of resistance. If you look at a coaxial transmission line and you look at each side of the line and you ask yourself, is the impedance on each side of a coaxial line the same above Earth? If you were to measure the impedance between the center conductor of a coaxial line and ground, Earth, you'd measure a certain impedance. If you were to measure the impedance between the shield and ground, Earth, you would also measure another impedance. Do you think those two impedances would be the same? The shield of a coaxial cable is connected to the chassis of the transmitter. The shield of a coaxial cable is Earth. The center conductor of a coaxial cable is not Earth. So obviously the impedance between the shield is at Earth potential, is at Earth potential, and the impedance between the center conductor and ground is very high. So a coaxial cable is an unbalanced line. Coaxial cable is an unbalanced line. A dipole antenna is a balanced antenna. Each side of the dipole is the same impedance above Earth. So if you were to connect your coaxial cable directly to the centre of a dipole, the centre conductor would go to one side of the dipole, the shield or braid would go to the other side of the dipole, and because the shield or braid is earthed at the transmitter, you would be effectively placing a low impedance on one side of your dipole. So connecting an unbalanced line to a balanced antenna has the effect of unbalancing the antenna. Now often that is done. A coaxial cable is disconnected to the center of the dipole. It works, and sometimes it works well. However, if you were to do that, and it works and you're happy with it, so be it. However, if you were to do it, you no longer have a dipole. When you connect your unbalanced line to the balanced antenna, you effectively, it's a bit of a simplification, but you effectively ground one side of your dipole through the shield of the coaxial cable. So you no longer have a dipole. You have something that looks like a dipole, but since it's so severely unbalanced, it is not a dipole. It really is, what will happen is that radio signals will flow from one side of the dipole down the shield of the dipole to Earth, and your coaxial cable will become part of the antenna. The function of the transmission line is not to radiate radio signals. The function of a transmission line is to be a conduit for radio signals to the antenna, and at the antenna they are radiated. However, when a coaxial cable is connected to the center of a dipole and it is unbalanced, radio signals travel through the coaxial cable to the antenna. When they arrive at the antenna, some of the signals will flow into the antenna and be radiated, but also some of the signals will flow back down the outside of the braid of the coaxial cable, and they will radiate from there as well. So what you've really got is an antenna that consists of a bit of a long wire or a short or wire antenna with a T at the top. So what you have is an antenna, but since the transmission line is radiating, it is no longer a dipole. It might look like a dipole, but it is not a dipole. Is there any problem with that arrangement? There are two problems. Number one is because your coaxial cable is radiating, you're going to get radiation perhaps into your shack. You don't want your transmission line to radiate. One of the functions of a transmission line is to act as a conduit for the radio frequency energy out of your transmitter to the antenna without causing any radiation. With a coaxial cable straight onto a dipole, the cable is going to radiate. That means you're going to have radiation in the shack. That could play havoc with your instruments. It could also be dangerous if you're using high power. It could also, if your coaxial cable runs close by a neighbour's TV antenna system or something like that, it could cause overload to that neighbour very easily. Ideally, you want your antenna up high somewhere and all the radiation to come from there so you don't interfere with neighbours. If your coaxial cable is radiating, then everywhere that coaxial cable goes, particularly if it goes nearby to domestic household equipment, then the radiation from that cable can potentially overload those domestic appliances and cause interference. The only other problem with this arrangement, which, as I said, is a common arrangement in amateur radio, is the antenna you have is not a dipole. And if you built such a system, you might be expecting your antenna to behave like a dipole. It will not behave like a dipole because it isn't. For example, you might be expecting radiation to be best broadside to the antenna. If your dipole is running east and west, you expect maximum radiation north and south. If your dipole is running north and south, you expect maximum radiation east and west. So if you've built such an antenna like this and you think you've made a dipole and then you've gone and unbalanced it by connecting coaxial cable directly to its center, well, it will work, but it won't work as a dipole. And if you're expecting it to work as a dipole to give some sort of predictable results in terms of radiation pattern, then you might be a little bit let down by the performance of the antenna. So if you want to connect a coaxial cable to the centre of a dipole and have the dipole retain the characteristics of a dipole, then basically you need to prevent those radio signals travelling down the outside of the coaxial feeder. Now, there are a couple of ways of doing that, and some of them are very easy. And perhaps the easiest way is to put a one-to-one ballon in the coaxial line at the feed point of the antenna. Now, a one-to-one Guanella ballon is just a radio frequency choke. A radio frequency choke is a coil of wire, and you can improve the choking of a coil of wire by putting a ferrite core in it. So if you were to wind just where the coaxial cable connects to the feeder of the dipole, to the feed point of the dipole, if you were to wind the coaxial cable around a ferrite rod, 7 or 8 turns around a ferrite rod, or through a ferrite toroid again for about 7 or 8 turns, that would create a radio frequency choke in the braid of the cable, and that would prevent radio frequency currents travelling down the braid and causing the coaxial line to radiate. A good one-to-one ballon will keep your dipole behaving like a dipole when fed with a coaxial line. The word ballon comes from balance to unbalance. The purpose of a ballon is to enable you to connect something which is balanced and unbalanced together. Now, a coaxial line is unbalanced, a dipole is balanced, and so we use a ballon to connect between the two. And a simple ballon for a dipole is simply, and probably the best, is simply to wind the last little bit of feed line before it connects to the dipole through a ferrite toroid or around a ferrite rod. So that's a basic half-wave dipole. Again, just in summary, work out the length of your dipole by the equation 300 divided by frequency in megahertz, multiplied by 0.5, multiplied by 0.96, and that gives you the length of the dipole in meters. Feed it at the center with 50 or 75 ohm cable. If you're using this on the HF bands, you do not have to use high quality cable. You could use RG58, which is an inexpensive 50 ohm cable, or you could even use a cheaper 75 ohm TV cable. Now, on such low frequencies as the HF band is 3 to 30 megahertz, the losses of these cables is not very much at all. However, the losses of the cable do increase, as we explained earlier, with standing waves. If you wanted to use this dipole on multiple bands, you will run into problems. It will work on some bands and may not work on others. For example, if this was an 80 meter dipole, any dipole cut to the equation we gave you earlier has a feed point impedance of 72 ohms. So if we've made ourselves an 80 meter dipole and connected it to a ballon and a coaxial line, it will work well. But suppose we want to use that dipole on the 40 meter band. Well, because we've increased the frequency from 3.5 megahertz to 7 megahertz, the size of our antenna is effectively twice the size. So instead of a half wave antenna, we started with a half wave dipole on 80 meters. If we tried to use this dipole on 40 meters, we actually now have a one wave antenna, one wavelength, and the feed point impedance is going to be very high. It's going to be 2 to 3,000 ohms, where our ballon's connected in the center, and we're connecting it to a 50 ohm transmission line. So think about it. It's a 1-to-1 ballon, so it's not going to do anything as far as impedance transformation is concerned. Think about the standing wave. Now we've got a 50 or 75 ohm line connected to an impedance that's going to be somewhere between 2 and 3,000 ohms on 40 meters. The standing wave ratio is going to be extremely high. Extremely high. It's going to be something like 20 to 1. If we have an antenna tuner at the transmitter, we may be able to deal with an SWR like that, but this antenna is going to perform very poorly, if at all, and the feed line losses are going to be enormous. We're also going to be dissipating a lot of our transmitter power in the ballon.
This is Q5, the Education Hour of the Gold Coast Amateur Radio Society.
If you wanted to use a dipole, a simple dipole that we've described on multiple bands, there are a couple of ways of doing it. And the alternative as well is to get away from just a simple dipole. There are a couple of special types of dipoles which will allow multiple band use. But just sticking with the simple dipole for the moment, if you want to use a simple dipole on multiple bands, probably the best method is to not use coaxial cable. If you don't use coaxial cable, then you do not have to use a ballon. And so we're using parallel transmission line, in other words. So if we use parallel balanced line, we don't need to use a ballon because we're using balanced line on a balanced antenna, and we have no need to use a ballon anymore. The other advantage of balanced line is that it's very low loss, and so we don't care about standing waves. We don't care what the standing wave ratio is. So if we made this same antenna for 80 meters using balanced line, we would not have a ballon. And if we tried to use it on 40 meters, we would have high SWR. And on many other bands, we would have ISWR. On some bands, we'd have low SWR, but we don't care because, as provided we can tune the impedance at the transmitter end of the line with an antenna tuning unit, we don't care because those standing waves will not cause additional line losses, and a balance line doesn't radiate either. So the best way to make a multi-band dipole is to use an ATU and parallel line. However, radio amateurs aren't real keen on using parallel line these days. It's very hard to buy, manufactured. You can get it, and it usually means making your own parallel line. But it is not hard to make, and I would encourage anyone to give it a go if you're interested in making it. If you've got a good ATU and you want to make a good multiband dipole, I'll encourage you to use parallel line. You can make it yourself out of any two wires. All you need is some sort of spacer to hold the two wires apart. I've used the small black plastic irrigation pipe, very cheap black plastic irrigation pipe. It's PVC or something like that, and drill a couple of holes in it and feed the wires through it. And you want to tie the wires off where they go through the spacer so the spacer doesn't slide around. But you can just about use anything at all for a spacer and make your own parallel line. It doesn't matter a great deal what impedance the line is. There are equations for working out the impedance. It's not hard. But anywhere between, any spacing between 20 millimetres and up to 50 millimetres is quite okay. The difficult thing about parallel line is installing it, because when you use parallel line, you can't run it under carpets and inside wall cavities. Each side of the line must have the same worldly experience as the other. So if for example, the one side of the parallel line goes near a metallic object, you really need to twist the line so that the other side of the line goes nearby the same metallic object for roughly the same distance. You must maintain the balance of a parallel line. Otherwise it becomes an unbalanced line and will radiate. The other thing you could do is put up multiple dipoles from a common feed point. Now this will work with both parallel line and will also work with coaxial cable and a ballon. So you might string up an 80 metre dipole. You've got a 1 to 1 coaxial line, a 1 to 1 ballon, and an 80 metre dipole. And you want to use this dipole, you want to use this antenna on 40 metres, well, you can actually connect to the feed point a 40 metre dipole and just run it in a slightly different direction to the 80 metre dipole. In fact, you can have three or four dipoles up in the air, all connected at the one common feed point where the ballon exists and coaxial cable running back to the transmitter. That works, and it works fine, except you've got a fair bit of wire in the air. Well, we're running out of time this evening. Perhaps another time we can go on with a couple of other more sophisticated types of dipoles. If you're really after multi-band use, two dipoles you might want to look at is the G5RB, which is quite a good multi-band dipole. It's a compromise antenna, though. I won't go into it tonight, but if you're looking at a G5RB, you will probably need a reasonably good antenna tuner. And the other option for a dipole is to go for something called an off-center fed dipole. We mentioned earlier that a dipole is a half-wave length long piece of wire. There is no need to feed a half-wave length long piece of wire or dipole at its center. It's often convenient to feed it at its center, but there are many times when we feed it at its end. For example, a J-pole, a common antenna on both HF and VHF. A J-pole is an end-fed dipole, and all that apparatus at the end is to allow an impedance match to the high impedance of the end of a dipole. An off-center-fed dipole is a dipole which is not fed at the end, and it's not fed at the center. It's fed somewhere between the end and the center. So the two antennas we recommend for you to look at, apart from the simple ones that we've just discussed, is the G5RV, which is the name of Lewis Varney. That was his call sign, G5RV, a United Kingdom call sign. He developed a multi-band dipole, and you might like to read up on that one and consider building it for multi-band use. And the other one is the off-center fed dipole, which has the feed point. If you imagine the half-wave dipole, instead of the feeder at the center, the feeder is connected to about one-third the way along the dipole from one end. So perhaps in the future we'll get time to discuss both of those in a bit more detail.
Some materials used in the program may be copyright to the respective authors. You have been listening to Q5, brought to you by the Gold Coast Amateur Radio Society.